broadcasting from the Kill Radio Newsroom in Los Angeles. Here is DJ Shy John with the weekly news from around the world.
And thank you, Brad, up there in Modesto on our sister station, KGIG. This is Shy John, and today is Tuesday, February the 18th, 2014. This morning in the Harper's Weekly Review, also dated February 18th, United Nations investigators issued a report recommending that North Korean officials, possibly including Supreme Leader Kim Jong-un, be tried by the International Criminal Court for ordering the systematic torture, starvation, and murder of political prisoners in a manner the lead investigator called reminiscent of Nazi atrocities during World War II. Large numbers of people were effectively starved to death and then had to be disposed of in pots, burned, and then buried, said Chairman Michael Kirby. It was the duty of other prisoners in the camps to dispose of them. Nazi scientists working at Dachau were found to have experimented with using mosquitoes to transmit malaria to Allied soldiers, citing expert advice that homosexuality is not genetic. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni said he would sign into law a bill that criminalizes the failure to report homosexuals and imposes sentences as severe as life imprisonment for homosexual acts. In Abuja, an anti-gay mob reportedly beat 14 men with whips and nail-studded clubs, then dragged four of them to a police station where the men were beaten by police. The co-pilot of an Ethiopian Airlines flight from Addis Ababa to Rome hijacked his own plane, reported the hijacking on its transponder, and landed in Geneva, then requested asylum. The pilot went to the toilet, said an airport executive. Swiss voters passed, by a margin of 0.8%, a ballot measure to introduce immigration quotas. Anders Behring Breivik demanded a PlayStation 3 and access to adult games, and Belgium legalized the euthanasia of minors. Death, said Dr. Daniel Basculane, is coming quickly. German police shut down Utopia. During a trip to announce federal relief measures for California, which is suffering its worst drought on record, U.S. President Barack Obama pledged to include a $1 billion fund to fight climate change in his 2015 budget and played golf at two of Coachella Valley's 124 courses, which collectively consume 17% of the region's water. Climatologists demonstrated that the jet stream has begun meandering from its expected path, leading to unexpected and long-lasting weather patterns around the world. And pathologists warned Canada's Inuit not to eat raw beluga meat after discovering that Arctic thaws had allowed the cat parasite Toxoplasma gondii, which causes blindness in humans, to spread to whale populations. My father, he says, we're not cooking it, said a hunter in the Northwest Territories. I set aside some muktuk, frozen whale blubber, and say, that's yours. You want to eat it raw? You go ahead. At the Winter Olympic Games in Sochi, where officials airlifted in 24 tons of salt from Switzerland to prevent event cancellations owing to melting snow at outdoor venues, the U.S. men's hockey team defeated Russia 3-2 in a shootout after an American referee disallowed a Russian goal late in the third period. Make soap out of the ref, chanted protesters in Moscow. I agree with everything said about the referee, said opposition activist Alexei Navalny. Even if the judge was wrong, we mustn't stick labels on anybody, said President Vladimir Putin. a senior army officer falsely announced a military takeover of the Libyan government. The Free Syrian Army fired its commander for reasons that included errors and carelessness in combat. And the lead negotiator for peace talks in Geneva between the regime of Bashar al-Assad and his opponents apologized to Syrians after the discussions reached an impasse. Pakistan ended peace talks with the Taliban after one of its factions killed 23 captive soldiers and an explosion at a Peshawar cinema known for showing pornographic films killed at least 11 people. "We condemn the blast," said a Taliban spokesman. Dozens of Turkish parliamentarians brawled during debate over a plan passed by the party of President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to bring the country's judiciary under direct government oversight. And an Indian MP deployed a canister of pepper spray while participating in one of several fights in Parliament during debate over the creation of a new state. Comedian Sid Caesar died at age 91, and Depression-era film star and U.S. diplomat Shirley Temple Black died at age 85. China declared its Jade Rabbit lunar rover dead, then alive. A Norwegian runologist cracked the Jotun Vuller code, and Swedish Surströmming expert Ruben Madsen was preparing to travel the mountains of Norway to open a swollen 25-year-old can of fermented herring, then eat its contents? "Think of the difference between Wagner and Chopin," Madsen said of aged herring's taste. "With Wagner, you get hit repeatedly with the same tones, but with Chopin, you can hear every instrument, every tone." Researchers in Pennsylvania found that the earwax of Caucasian men smells more strongly than the earwax of East Asian men. And researchers in California explained why skunks don't live in social groups. "We went into it," said biologist Theodore Stankiewicz, focusing on the noxious spray. I guess this article written by Jeremy Keene.
Hey, big spender. Spend a little time with me.
All right, well, I have one more here. This kind of has to do with sociology, kind of has to do with finance. And it comes to us from Moyers & Company, BillMoyers.com. Why Cupid seems to be missing more often. February 14th, 2014 by Sam Pizzigatti. This first appeared in Too Much. Finding true love, philosophers have always understood, can get complicated in deeply unequal places. Grand fortunes tend to give Cupid a hard time on Valentine's Day and every other. If you gain fame, power, or wealth, you won't have any trouble finding lovers, as social critic Philip Slater noted years ago in The Pursuit of Loneliness. But they will be people who love fame, power, and wealth. But philosophers no longer have a corner on the love and inequality connection. All sorts of social scientists are now working that intersection where wealth and romance meet, and they're uncovering an assortment of troubling trends. Researchers are finding, for instance, that Cupid's arrows fall less randomly than they did back in the middle of the 20th century. Americans today have become distinctly less likely to marry someone outside their income bracket. Social scientists have a label for this phenomenon. They call it assortative mating. New research from the University of Pennsylvania's Jeremy Greenwood and colleagues shows that since 1960, this assortative mating has contributed significantly to how unequal we've become. The Rich Marry Rich and Get Richer, notes Andrea Garcia Vargas, one commentator on the research. The poor marry poor and get poorer. But the cause and effect there goes both ways. Assortative mating widens the income gaps that divide us. Wider income gaps nurture assortative mating. Back in the 1960s, a much more equal time in America, millions of men with just high school diplomas could count on good union wage jobs and make nearly as much or even more at times than someone with a college degree. Social interactions across income levels have become considerably rarer. In that more equal nation, most Americans lived within income hailing distance of most other Americans. They interacted socially with a fairly large cross-section of the nation's overall population. Today, with Americans much more divided by income, those social interactions across income levels have become considerably rarer. People increasingly marry in their own income bracket, if they marry at all. And that brings us to another mating consequence of growing inequality: the ongoing slide in the share of American adults married. In 1960, 72% of Americans over 18 lived the married life. The 2010 share, just 51%. Among younger Americans, an even steeper tumble. 3/5 of 18 to 29-year-olds had spouses in 1960, compared to only 1/5 today. How to explain this trend? One major factor: the economic squeeze on working Americans. A half century ago, a single wage earner could support a family. No longer. Two earners have become a necessity for maintaining anything close to a comfortable middle class status. But keeping two people together has never been harder. In our ever more unequal country, jobs have become less secure, workplaces more stressful. At every turn, the strains on married life multiply. Affluent couples can more easily overcome the strain, note sociologists Sarah Corse and Jennifer Silva. Their survey research paper, Intimate Inequalities: Love and Work in a Post-Industrial Landscape, appeared last year. Affluent people, Corse and Silva show, can afford the investments necessary to keep their marriages healthy. They can spend on everything from therapists to date nights and get away from it all vacations. Couples working at low-paid labor find such therapy, formal and informal, simply unaffordable. America's top-heavy distribution of income and wealth, Corse and Silva research details, has left many economically insecure Americans unable to imagine being able to provide materially and emotionally for others. Amid this high-stress reality, adds Atlantic commentator Nancy Cook, marriage is fast becoming a luxury good. People who can't afford the investments that help keep marriages together split and sink from the middle class. The nation becomes a more unequal and lonelier place. For that loneliness, we pay a heavy price. Air pollution increases your chances of dying early by 5%, obesity by 20%, as Aditya Chakraborty observed last fall in The Guardian. Excessive loneliness pushes up your odds of an early death by 45%. Those figures come from neuroscientist John Cacioppo, a veteran researcher on social seclusion. We have, he writes, created a culture of social isolates, atomized by social and economic upheaval, and separated by vast inequalities. If you want to find love, in sum, we need to go looking in more equal places. Labor journalist Sam Pizzagatti, an Institute for Policy Studies associate fellow, writes widely about inequality. His latest book, The Rich Don't Always Win: The Forgotten Triumph Over Plutocracy That Created the American Middle Class, 1900 to 1970. Too bad the book isn't there. Well, that's all I have for the news this week, people. Please be good to each other in the coming week. Yes. stay out of the news.